I'm going to take you back, a long way back, more than 35 years ago, June of 1975, and Perth brothel Madam Shirley Finn was found dead in her 1971 Dodge Phoenix on Melville Parade near the 7th Fairway at Royal Perth Golf Club. She'd been executed, shot four times in what gangsters might refer to as a bowling ball killing. Now, if you pick up a copy of WA author David Wish Wilson's new book, Line of Sight, and the fictional account of the death of brothel Madam Ruby Devine, it does seem rather eerily familiar to the unsolved murder of Shirley Finn. I'd like to know why. David Wish Wilson joins me in the studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Now, good morning, Jeff. Great to be here.
David, a piece of fiction based on real events. Can you explain why your story is so similar, but why it has to be called a novel?
Well, you know, in this I was kind of inspired as a young academic coming up through the Centre for Aboriginal Studies at Curtin University by Indigenous writers like Kim Scott and Kevin Gilbert and others. Their kind of way of using fiction as a means of exploring the truth, basically writing into the gaps in the historical record, not necessarily by distorting the truth, as Flannery O'Connor, the American writer, said, but rather by using distortion to get at the truth. So Shirley, the murder of Shirley Finn is one of those kind of iconic Perth stories, and every city has them.
Mm.
But so much is unknown, so little is there on the factual record.
Mm.
Fiction seemed to be the appropriate way of trying to get at the truth of what happened.
Tell me how it became an important story for you. Tell me about Shirley Finn's son.
Well, I was working as a creative writing teacher at Casuarina Prison back in the 90s. And I got to know Shane. Quite well when I was teaching there. And it was him who suggested, pretty much, that I, you know, as a writer, that I do something with the story. Of course, I was quite a young child when mm. Shirley Finn was murdered. But I started talking to people. You know, Shane introduced me to Rose Black, who was Shirley Finn's partner at the time, and I started talking to other people from back in that period, including policemen and others. But
Can you give us a little précis of the story of Shirley Finn? Like you, I mean, I was 12 at the time, but I remember the drama and all the whispers that accompanied it, the Royal Commission into Prostitution in WA, allegations that linked police and politicians, including Police Minister Ray O'Connor, who then became Premier and then became a prisoner. Can you tell us the story of Shirley Finn as you know it?
Well, I mean... What is on the public record is that Shirley Finn was murdered 2 days before she had a meeting with the federal tax man, and she was in a difficult position. She had a great deal of debt to pay off, and you know, she was quoted by one of the last witnesses to see her alive on that day, a man who came to buy her car. She said, you know, them bastards are going to have to pay their way, pay their bit of it. So you know, the general kind of feeling around the majority of the people that I've been talking to is that she was murdered essentially to keep her quiet, and that it wasn't a coincidence that she was killed 2 days before she was due to meet the tax man, basically because, you know, she was threatening to name names potentially, and this would have put the system of regulating crime, which was kind of the standard practice around Australia at the time, into a, you know, kind of problematic situation.
Okay, so you know what's known, and we all know what's known. What has your research been able to uncover? Have you felt that you've got a little closer to learning a little bit more?
I think so. I think, you know, it's 35 years now, and particularly over the last couple of years, when I first started talking to people in the 90s, there was still a lot, you know, a lot of anxiety, still a lot of people very fearful, because... unlike, say, Juanita Nielsen in Sydney, who was murdered and disappeared, Shirley Finn wasn't made to disappear. She was very publicly murdered.
Mm.
And a lot of policemen I've showed the CIB file to said one thing that is very clear from the crime scene is that whoever did it knew that they were going to get away with it. So it was a very kind of public statement.
Mm.
And that, of course, has been very successful in terms of keeping people quiet over the years. But it's my feeling over the last couple of years, people are more willing to talk about it. Particularly policemen I've spoken to, often the strange thing about this is often the people angriest about the fact that the Shirley Finn murder is is still unsolved. There have been policemen I've spoken to because of the general feeling that there might have been police involvement.
Yes.
Of course, unproven. But a lot of these police are angry because it kind of tarnishes the whole police force, and there's a sense of anger towards the the so-called purple circle of potentially corrupt police that these people tend to thrive in that situation. People get promoted because they're in on the giggle or in on the joke, not necessarily because they're good policemen, and good policemen are sometimes overlooked.
Yeah. At a quarter to 11, you're listening to David Wish-Wilson. He's the author of a new book called Line of Sight. It's true, David, there is a core of interested people who continue to dig into this story, and among them a former colleague of mine here at the ABC, Juliet Wills. Gary Edsett, in 1993, was given 3 hours to look at the confidential police file into the murder, and Gary's joined us on the program. Morning to you, Gary.
Good morning to you, fellas. How are you going?
Yeah, good. What are your memories, Gary, of those few hours and the documents you got to have a good look at?
Having sat there for 3 hours, I thought to myself I should really write a book. There's just so much material here in terms of the intrigue and the mystique that surrounds the death of Shirley Finn, that it obviously did lend itself to a book. As a journalist, I'm sort of very curious to know why David decided to go down the path of fiction. Obviously, there are defamation laws, which I'm acutely aware of, but just the amount of material that's there in terms of the statements taken, some of the scenarios leading up to the death, as David's gone into, the fact that she was in trouble with the tax office, she was due to meet someone in 2 days' time to go through all this, and she was starting to threaten to name names. That's the stuff that fascinated me most of all. And I've got actually in front of me, David, the letter that she wrote to the taxation office. It might be worth reading just one paragraph from it, when she was trying to stall them in relation to the debts of about $100,000 that they were calling in. She says, "From the very nature of my business, from time to time I have to make out payments to various people in order to continue to operate in business. You cannot operate a business of my type without a considerable amount of expenditure by way of kickbacks, etc., which cannot be shown by any bookkeeping system." I mean, if the people who she was making those kickbacks to knew she was writing this stuff and making these threats, it's pretty obvious they had to take her out.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it was a kind of dangerous game she was playing, and she must have been aware of it too. I mean, I have the feeling that because Shirley was what you might call a celebrity madam, she had a lot of friends who were politicians and people in the media, etc. She possibly thought that this might have protected her, but as you correctly say, towards the end there, the fact that she was threatening to name names became, it became obviously untenable for those for those people who were threatened.
Gary, I'm curious to know, do you have your own suspicions as to why, the public provided something like 400 pieces of information, why there's never been an arrest?
Because I believe the police were involved in her murder, and I think that the people that were involved in taking the statements were very closely linked to the people that may have been involved in her murder. I think they were a purple circle. Some are alive, some aren't.
And the other thing, we've both had a look at that CIB file, Gary. One of the interesting things is what, not so much what is in it, but what has been left out. I've spoken to a couple of witnesses who gave statements to the police, and they never made it into the file. It seems as though pretty much anything that was problematic or when it went against the kind of the narrative that was being pushed was conveniently left out, and the whole thing was wrapped up very quickly.
Yeah, for example, you're talking about a police vehicle being seen by some witnesses.
Police vehicle being seen, a green car parked alongside early in the morning, possibly cleaning up the crime scene. Another witness described two men running away from the scene, and that statement was given to the South Perth Police Station the same morning that Shirley Finn was found, and that never made it into the file. So all of these things have slowly come out over the years, but it's certainly...
I don't know about you, David. I mean, I'm not going to name the bloke, but there was one particular guy that I've written about in a magazine piece I did for The West a couple of years ago. There was one guy that I did meet who was an extremely close friend of Shirley Finn's, and when I went to see him first of all, there was genuine fear talking to me. And I've been back to him again, and the fear was still there. And his line is, "Gary, I'd love to talk to you, but these people are still alive." And
that interested me. Yeah, Gary, I read your article, and you talked about this fellow who told you that Shirley Finn was killed to keep it quiet. He said that there was no reason it wouldn't happen again if a new threat emerged. Will you pay him another visit 2 years from now to see if he is any more at his ease?
Oh, I mean, every time this comes up, I think I should just jump in the car and go and knock on his door again. You know, I'm just talking about it now. I mean, I know where he last lived, and I'd love to try him again. But I do get the feeling that while there's certain people still around, that he's not prepared to say anything. Maybe he's written a book, David, or maybe he's written some memoirs and might make them available to someone like me or you, because I really did have an impression he was due to meet her for dinner that night himself, and she cancelled on him early on in the afternoon.
I know the person you're talking
about. And you know, I really did have an impression from, you know, just gut feeling, and being a journo for 27 years or 28 years or whatever it is, that the bloke knew something. And so maybe I'll get out there sooner rather than later again.
Well, I hope you do, Gary, because you've been pretty hot on the trail, as hot on the trail of a cold case as you can be. I really appreciate you coming on the program today.
No problem.
Gary Adshead from the West Australian. David, just before I farewell you, you know, this novel, kind of, you could read it superficially, and it's just a rollicking good read, but there is an undercurrent to it, and even if you do say that its characters are invented and that links to real life are coincidental, I guess you're hoping that somehow this book will tease out some things?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had the same experience as Gary. I've talked to a lot of people who, you know, are still reasonably fearful, and I'm hoping, you know, by being here talking about it, and also the fact that the novel's been produced. I mean, when I first started researching this story, I was told a number of times, you know, this book will never be written. There's a whole graveyard of books written about Shirley Finn that were never published, and that's certainly true. I've come across some of them. But the fact that, you know, a book has been written about it, that it's out there, 35 years have passed. And as you say, it's going to have particular resonances to people in Perth. It's very familiar. But the idea, of course, is that someone in Cairns or Hobart who picks up the book, who knows nothing about the story, should still be able to enjoy it as a crime thriller. And that was pretty much my intention.
But I could hear it in Gary's voice, that nagging interest, and clearly you feel that very, very keenly too. What about the Finn children? Where are they, and how have their lives been?
Yeah, I've been in a bit of contact with Bridget. Shane is out of prison now, Shane's been pretty thoroughly institutionalized over the years. He spent a long period of his life in jail, so he's out there doing his own thing. But I mean, it's really my hope. You know, the people who know exactly what happened on that night, thus far they haven't been talking. But, I mean, I'm aware of also other people who know that they know. And I'm hoping that, you know, enough time has passed now that people will, you know, come out and speak about this more openly for the sake of the children, if for nothing else.
The book is called Line of Sight, but I think you'll be familiar with the narrative. David Wish-Wilson, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome, Jeff.